Morning, you're right. I'm all right. I hope you are. I really do hope you are. Lovely cup of tea. Lovely cup of tea. Right. It has just ticked past 8 in the a.m. British summertime on Wednesday. It's now Wednesday, isn't it? When Wednesday? Wednesday. The 27th of May in the year of our Lord, 2026. Who are you? You know who you are. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Without you, it isn't a thing. Cheers for tuning in. You make it. Without you guys, it's just me rambling into the void, isn't it? So, as always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. And how are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Little Harry, for anyone who's new, isn't little. There's just a much, much bigger Harry. Little Harry's taller than me. He's comfortable with it. He doesn't mind. Should we stop faffing about, though? Should we just stop fannying around and get into it? What's the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about this morning? What are they lying to you by omission about, as they always do? All right, we've got Blair. Starmer has no plan for Britain. He's intervened. The Dark Lord has intervened. And the heat's still on. It was hot again yesterday, and today the heat is on. The heat is on. What? The pressure's high. Just to stay alive. That's not funny. Some people die of heat stroke. Okay, the Daily Telegraph, the Tory graph. This is George Harrison's wife, ex-wife of the Beatles, Beatles fame, George Harrison. The Travelling Wilburys, wasn't he? And they're making it or made a biopic, a Beatles biopic thing, and she wasn't asked for any input. That's it. That's the only reason why. She's on the front page there. All right, Blair. Starmer has no plan for Britain. Oof. The Dark Lord has intervened. One ring for the Dark Lord. On his dark throne. In the land of Mordor. Where the shadows lie. Who let Sauron in the room? Own up. Oh no, who let Blair speak? Former PM launches stinging attack on Labour for refusing to leave its comfort zone. Yeah, he wrote like a whole essay, like a 5,000 plus word essay, like a whole thing about it. It's in the news a fair bit today, to be honest. It's probably, well, it's the main story, I think. Look, there's Blair. There he is. Evil man. He's starting to look evil, isn't he? Like the Dark Lord. Like he's corrupted. Like his moral corruption is now showing through physically. Blair. See? All right. What has he actually said? A number of things, a whole number of things. Because remember, Tony Blair is on the right of the Labour Party. I mean, he'd call himself the centre. But the radical centre. That's an oxymoron, isn't it? Isn't the centre, by definition, not very radical? Okay, he likes the term, the radical centre. But in terms of the Labour Party, he's firmly on the right, as always has been. When he first got into power, he rewrote the constitution a bit. The Labour Party constitution. Sort of stopped talking about the ownership of industry by the state and things like that. So, for full lefties, hardline lefties, you know, they never really liked Blair. You know, he would win for them, but they always considered him like some sort of horrible compromise. And so, with all that said, Blair doesn't really like the direction that someone like Angela the Fridge Rayner Big Bird or King Andy Bumham, the first of his name, he doesn't like the way they would take the party or even particularly Wes Streeting, is not happy with the way Starmer's doing it. Blair has basically said, you know, this is what I would do. You know, look, come on. This is what I would do if I was in power. And yeah, a whole number of things he said. Should we quickly whip through them? Well, one of the things, Blair's an arch Europhile, though. Like, arch Europhile. So on that, he's actually on board with Keir Starmer and the things that Wes Streeting has said. Tony Blair would like Britain to rejoin the EU. So that's one thing where there isn't sort of giant clear light between them. But other than that, what has he said? He said that they're damaging the economy, largely. That you're screwing with the economy and businesses. You're creating headwinds instead of tailwinds for businesses. All the taxes you're putting on businesses. I mean, I don't disagree with him myself. Yeah. If you're going to take the far left that is the current Labour Party, whether it's Starmer or Burnham, be slightly more to the left, and I'm over here, Blair is somewhere in the middle. So a lot of things he says in this, I'd be like, well, yeah, it's a start. It's a start. Yeah, stop screwing businesses. Stop sort of destroying them. Stop sort of strangling them in the cradle with taxes. He had a pop at Starmer's legislation about wages, minimum wage and things. Again, to a proper lefty, a dyed-in-the-wall sort of kind of more old Labour, 20th century pinko type. That's all good, but Blair wasn't that really, was he? There was like a sort of a managerial, almost, I was going to say pragmatist. That's probably a bit too kind to just call him a pragmatist. No, I'm going to say, no, he was pretty pragmatic. I mean, obviously he had his ideology and agenda to destroy this country, to rub our noses in diversity. Oh, he doesn't say anything about immigration. Not that I saw. I haven't read the whole essay myself, but I've read multiple articles this morning. I didn't see anything about immigration. Well, legal immigration, certainly. Nothing about that. Nothing about demographic change and a sectarian nightmare. Future sectarian nightmare. Nothing at all about that. Not a dicky bird. But no, the economy. You're screwing with businesses too much. And the general point, sort of the general point he said is that Keir Starmer and this Labour government haven't got a plan. Well, that was it. Look, Starmer has no plan for Britain. That was sort of the overarching meta point he was saying. He was like, you've got no plan. And Wes Streeting and Andy Burnham don't seem to have a plan either. That's not wrong, is it? Tony Blair was saying, what you need for government, you know, what you need for government is a proper set of policies for everything, or at least the biggest things. At least for the economy, have a proper set of thought-out, joined-up policies. And, like, a vision for Britain. A vision for what you want, a clear one, what you want Britain to be and look like. Proper set of policies that all work together in unison. I mean, it's 101 stuff, isn't it? Sort of 101, it's like sort of GCSE-level politics stuff, isn't it? He's basically saying, have a proper government, basically, isn't he? And yeah, you know, he's saying that the way Starmer's doing it, has been doing it, is just sort of stumbling, bumbling along. I'm paraphrasing there, but stumbling, bumbling along from one thing to another. Yeah, that's what it looks like, isn't it? Well, not what it looks like, it's what it is, isn't it? Again, he's not wrong. And that you just leave ministers out there to just sort of flail around. Try and say a few things and then get defeated by your own backbench nearly every time and have to do a U-turn. Yeah. You can only imagine from the Starmer camp. Can you imagine actual Keir Starmer? Well, can you just imagine if you were the leader? Not even of Britain or of a country, just you was like the CEO of a big company or something, anything really. Small company. And the old guy, the guy that used to run it, just writes 5,000 words about what a crap job you're doing and how you haven't got a clue. How you're fundamentally failing, like a truly fundamental level. You wouldn't be best pleased, would you? I don't think. And so some, or many, in the Labour Party coming out saying, oh, this is refreshing. Yes, Tony Blair was great, wasn't he, remember? All he's saying is really good and interesting and we should take it on board. And then you got a whole bunch of Starmer fanboys, Starmer partisans, just saying, look, Tony Blair hasn't been in power for 30 years. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Just pipe down, Tone. Your time's over. But of course they would say that, wouldn't they? If your job is absolutely dependent on Keir Starmer's position, then you would say that, wouldn't you? But yeah, it's not like Tony Blair's come out and said, like, Burnham's the man, or Streeting would be best, or I fully back Keir forever. No, there's none of that. He's criticising all of them. I suppose that's the prerogative of a senior statesman. A knight of the garter. All right, we'll talk about it a little bit more as we go on, because it's on the front pages of a few of these. What else have we got? Sturgeon, Wee Jimmy Cranky's motorhome story thrown into doubt. Yeah. Yeah, doubt. Is there a doubt button I can press? Doubt. So apparently, I didn't realise that part of her story about the motorhome, you know, the 125, 130 grand motorhome, that embezzler Peter Morrell, her ex-husband, bought with stolen money. Remember that? Apparently her story was that she didn't even know it existed. I didn't realise that. I thought she knew it existed and just hadn't really questioned where the dough came from to pay for it. But apparently her story is that she didn't even know it existed. But then, so now, though, people are saying, no, we saw her, like, in it or near it. The story is something like eyewitnesses saw, it's all a bit tawdry, actually. It's all a little bit, he said, she said, petty. Apparently she was seen buying pizza and garlic bread and the motorhome was parked in the car park. Something like that. So you must have known, you did know it existed. Almost certainly. We haven't actually got a photograph of you sitting in the passenger seat, but all right. Sturgeon's fabric of lies falling apart. all right, okay. Iran will sign peace deal if it gets $24 billion. Okay. Its own $24 billion, actually, of frozen assets. But again, that's a big part of the American strategy. If they're not going to bomb them into oblivion, they're certainly going to crush what little economy they've got left. That includes freezing their sort of foreign-held assets and not giving them back. Like Iran's got any real leverage. They're like, give us back our $24 billion. You can imagine the senior players at the White House sort of sniggering at that. Yeah. You're not getting that money back, bro. You're not getting it back. Okay, the Times, the venerable Times. Social media ban will protect children from addictive features. So this is the thing rearing its head again. About a social media ban for under 16s in this country. They've tried it in Australia, and apparently it's not that popular because it doesn't really work. Kids, by the time you're 14 or 15, if you want to get round that, you'll be able to get round it. Right, a 14 or a 15-year-old, these days anyway, a lot more savvy than the like when I was that age. Well, we just didn't have mobile phones when I was that age, literally. Let alone smartphones. There was no internet. Nowadays, yeah, kids are like, what, there's a ban? Please, just let me get a VPN or something, some other app that just lets me get in there. You ask someone else, you just Google it. How'd you get around that? Oh, it's really easy. It's just a few clicks. Fine, done. So there's that. The kids resent it and just get round it. So it doesn't really work. And then, like, and then, like, apparently in Australia, this is some of the feedback so far, is that the parents, like, well, some of them anyway, had hoped that the kids would get off social media and start, you know, start living a real life, touch grass, start going out and playing sports, like, in a wholesome way or something, like it was the 1970s, the 1980s. But it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. They find a screen somewhere else or something, rather. Or as I say, they just get round it. Or the kid just really, really resents it and them. They take away the kid's favourite thing and the kid just hates them now. The kid's already addicted to, God knows what, Snapchat, Insta, I don't know, Facebook. Harry, Zoomers, I want to just ask the opinion of an authentic Zoomer real quick. Is it right, am I right in thinking that Zoomers don't really use Facebook much? That's not really their thing? Or no, is it?
No, not really. It's more Instagram.
It's what?
Instagram. It's
Instagram. Instagram's yeah. The one, is it? Okay. TikTok?
Yeah.
Instagram and TikTok, yeah. Not Boomerbook. Even I'm not on Facebook. I got like a ban ages and ages ago. And I was like, oh, fine. A ban for something really, really, really minor. I wasn't even saying anything particularly spicy, if I recall. Just banned off there. And I'm like, oh, fine. That's fine. I'll live my life without Facebook. I won't appeal that. I won't try and get back on it or anything. I think they wanted to get me back on it when I was with Reform. But anyway, yeah, fine. I can live a life without Facebook. Fine. It's all just boomer slop, isn't it? Isn't it just populated with boomers being retarded, not understanding memes and stuff? That's the impression I get without being on it.
Yeah, no, that's all it is.
Right. Some AI-generated cat meme and boomers asking, is this real? Like a cat driving a rally car. Some septuagenarian, is this real? Anyway, vote green. Right, okay. Shouldn't have a pop at boomers unnecessarily. Based boomers are some of the most based people you'll ever see. I'll say that, I'll stand by that. A lot of people chuck a lot of shade at boomers. A lot of them deserve it. But the ones that don't deserve it really don't deserve it, I think. Yeah. You find yourself a based boomer, a proper based boomer. Because they're old enough to remember. They're old enough to remember a world before this insanity. And that it was good. And lo, it was good. All right. I'm not on TikTok or Instagram. I'm not interested. Not interested in that. I'm too old for that. 45 this summer, me. Well, I'm going to take loads of pictures of my own meal and post that. Or something. Stealing my time. All right, so in Britain, anyway, get back to social media ban for under 16s. I think it's really cynical. I don't buy at all that the government cares about the safety of children. They wouldn't flood this country with foreign barbarians who per capita commit sex crime on a crazy level. If they cared about the actual safety of us, they wouldn't be doing that, would they? No, this is to do with an exercise in power and control. They make certain things illegal for under 16s, and then that means a couple of things. One, you have to prove you're over 16, i.e. you send in some ID, i.e. you can't be anonymous, i.e. the government can see exactly who's doing what at all times. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they'll exploit the misery and grief of parents, bereaved parents, in order to do that. Oh, yeah. They're not above that. And it's a slippery slope to censorship in general on the internet. First, it's under 16s can't do XYZ, look at XYZ, click on XYZ, and then it's everyone. Yeah, they'll exploit the grief of a parent who's lost a child in order to achieve that. They'll do that without blinking. They'll do that 100 times over. It's disgustingly cynical. Oh, it's about protecting our children. No, it's not. There's loads of things you would do if it was really about that. Not just internet. Not just social media. If you really cared about the safety of people in this country or children. You'd have a thorough investigation into grooming stroke rape gangs for a start, wouldn't you? Okay. Lurch to left puts Britain at risk, Blair tells Labour. Yeah, Keir and, of course, Bumham. Andy Bumham, King of the North. Far to the left. Far to the left of Blair, really. PM attacks Bumham and practicing homosexualist Wesley Streeting. He attacks them. In words, of course. He's not going for a double takedown, ground and pound. All right. What else have we got? What else have we got? The Daily Mail, pure slop. Pure subversion. Trying to pretend it's not. The Mail Group. Disgusting. Right, there's Lucy Punch there. She's in some TV thing called Amanda Land, is it? I've not watched it. I've got no intention of ever watching it. Couldn't care less. But they're calling her Amanda. Her name's Lucy, isn't it? Lucy Punch? Right. Amanda Land's a modelling contract. Don't care. Right. Now Blair savages Labour's lurch to the left. XPM issues blistering verdict on Starmer's government. Blistering. Blistering. But warns that moving even further left with Bumham is doomed to fail. Yeah, probably is. I mean, yeah. Again, the Dark Lord on his dark throne in the land of Mordor where shadows lie isn't wrong. Labour's lurch to the left is pushing Britain towards relegation, Tony Blair warns today. Relegation from the top tier of countries he's talking about there. I don't think Britain is. Well, we are in the top tier of countries in a number of ways. Our economy, of course, tiny compared to, you know, United States and Russia. Still in the top 10, I think, isn't it? Pretty sure it is. We're one of only seven, eight countries that have got nukes. Even if we do buy them off the United States. Got a nuclear submarine program. We've still got quite good intelligence services. I'd say we're obviously not in the top tier. If there's one top tier, it would have to be the United States and China and Russia knocking at the door of that, right? We're in the next one. We're still in the next one. That's not just cope. I mean, that's an objective thing to say. Objectively true thing to say. But yeah, are we in danger of being relegated to even below that? If we lurch to the left. Yeah. I mean, we still lead the world in a number of different things. Various technologies and research. High-end stuff, some high-end stuff. But yeah, we're at risk of not even that. Yeah, it's true. Okay. All right. The Eye Paper. Look, there's a little bit about Roops there. Vince Rupert, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Nigel Al-Farage, who says, you can't really confront Islam, because if you do, you'll lose. When asked about demographic decline, he said, I'm not interested in that. Remember that? Wasn't that in the Steve Edgington interview? Are you concerned about demographic decline? No, that doesn't worry me. I think that's what he said. Might not be verbatim, but he's like, no, I don't care. Oh, but there's no difference between them. Yeah, right. Farage is like Lemon Nando's, low is full heat. there's the Eye Paper. Okay. Britain at risk of becoming irrelevant. Blair turns on Labour rivals. Former Labour PM, the Dark Lord, launches a blistering broadside. It's not a blistering a blistering broadside. At Starmer and leadership contenders, saying Britain risks being, quote, marooned on an island of irrelevance, quote. What imagery? An island of irrelevance. Okay. I mean, again, not wrong, is he? I don't think he's necessarily wrong. Tony Blair accuses PM of coming to power without, quote, a coherent plan, quote, for the UK. Yeah, it was, wasn't it, blatantly. Remember his manifesto? It was Keir Starmer's manifesto. It was very, 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 very thin. And in the years and certainly the months leading up to the general election, where everyone knew Rishi was going to get pwned at the ballot box, and the mainstream media and others trying to get Keir Starmer to say exactly what his plans were, exactly what everything meant in the manifesto, trying to get him to pad out the manifesto in any way they can, and he just didn't. He just spent those months sort of actively being vague, actively not giving us a coherent plan with any real detail about what he's going to do. It was mad to have ever voted for them. All the people that voted Labour at the last election. What did you think you were doing? There was get the Tories out. The Lib Dems probably would have been worse. Didn't have many options, right? You could have voted Reform, but I don't think they were standing in a gigantic number of seats, were they? They're standing quite a few. Anyway. There weren't great options, were there? If you remember, there was this general feeling, massive feeling of get the Tories out, of punish the Tories. Okay. Well, it was likely to be Labour then, wasn't it, at that moment in time? We've got options now, haven't we? Reform and restore, at the very least. Should really think about aiming high and voting low, of course. Because Rupert is full heat Nando sauce. Why do you want the lemon, the lemon and herb Nando sauce? Nigel's lemon and herb. Weak. You want the full shebang, right? You want the hot tamale. All right. Tony Blair says in his 5,600 word essay, that's not short. 5,000 word essay is like a fair few pages. Maybe I'll read it later today. I mean, I was only aware that it was a thing this morning, so I literally haven't had time to read it. Maybe I'll read it today. Probably should. Right, it's 5,600 word essay. He says, policies have given, quote, headwinds, not tailwinds, to business. There you go. And calls for radical centre to harness AI as a route to prosperity. Oh, that's the thing he said, which I completely and utterly disagree with. You know my feelings about AI. Outside of a few limited functions, medical research perhaps. Tony Blair loves AI. He loves it, always has. He was talking about it when it was like when most people still weren't talking about it. He loves AI and ID cards because he's, you know, mental. Because he does want to be like an all-powerful Dark Lord in some way. So of course he loves AI. What, get Peter Thiel to get a 100% surveillance on everyone at all times and then just hand Tony Blair the keys to that? Like, Tony, you know you'll be oppressed by it along with everyone else, right? And your children and grandchildren, you know that, right? Yeah, you don't care. No, I know. All right, Tony Blair, look. It's really difficult to keep sort of the evil out of his features, isn't it? Imagine that. I'll devolve Parliament. I'll break the back of the power, the hard won power of Westminster over centuries. I'll break that. Yeah. I'll sort of ruin government by flooding it with quangos. Yep. I'll ruin the actual demographic by flooding the country with foreign people and gaslighting anyone who's got any problem with it. Rub their noses in diversity so that you don't have a higher trust, low crime society anymore. And then I'll accept an order of the garter and pretend I'm some sort of brilliant statesman. I did great things. What a scumbag. Scum. Why Labour must return to the radical centre to reverse Britain's decline. Like you've got the answers, Tony. Like you didn't mismanage nearly everything you did. You gave the impression, the veneer, that you were a great leader. That you ran government well. In fact, it was disastrous, sir. Why Labour must do anything? Shut up, Tony. Ugh. In a damning verdict on Starmer and his leadership rivals, the former Prime Minister makes a bombshell intervention to warn that his party is playing with fire, quote, playing with fire, and the country now risk relegation from the Premier League of Nations. Yeah, one thing he said, you're playing with fire and the party and the country. All right. The Guardian, ooh. Harry? The Guardian. Russia relentlessly targeting UK infrastructure, spy chief warns. Quite interesting. The head of GCHQ, a woman, it's so little, something, it's a double-barreled name, something Butler, Anne something Butler. I find it weird when the head of MI5 or MI6 or GCHQ, I've just sort of got a Twitter account. I don't know if she has, but I think the leaders of MI5 and MI6 have. They've just got a Twitter account. Or the head of GCHQ will just make a speech, an inaugural lecture, an annual lecture. They're starting an annual lecture, doing a speech. Again, call me old-fashioned, but aren't these organisations supposed to be secret? If not entirely secret, at least secretive. It blows my mind that the head of MI5 or MI6 has got a Twitter account. Or that the head of GCHQ will make a speech. No, no one's really supposed to know who you are. You're supposed to be entirely secret. Pretty much entirely secret. We're just abandoning all of that. I guess so, yeah. Yeah. Okay, the head of GCHQ, anyway, I don't know, GCHQ is like signals intelligence, right? They're the ones that actually do a lot of the spy work, basically, electronically. You know, they're intercepting things. Like if MI5 or MI6 wanted intelligence or something, they quite often go to GCHQ and say, can you bug this or that for us? The GCHQ is sort of, you know, really is sort of the heart of British intelligence in various ways. Those three things, MI5, MI6 and GCHQ, are like work together, are supposed to work together to get things done, to paint a sort of an intelligence picture. Okay, maybe the equivalent in American is like, anyway, the America's got loads and loads of different intelligence things going on, but the NSA. Absolutely. Anyway, all right, the point is, I was trying to make, getting into the weeds there, the point is that it's really weird to me that this person would just do a speech and just talk about, okay, they're talking about Russia and China. They're saying that Russia is, well, as the headline there says, relentlessly targeting UK infrastructure. They made a couple of specific points about some bomb went off in Germany, in Leipzig, in Germany, that the Russians did, that like sort of set fire to a warehouse. Or there was, they mentioned there was some warehouse in Britain that got, there was a fire or got burnt down because a parcel was sent from Russia to Britain and it was like a bomb or an incendiary or something. And okay. And that the Russians are, again, sort of in all sorts of ways trying, cyber attacks, lots of cyber attacks from the Russians, according to them. Who am I to naysay them if that's what they're saying? A reckless sabotage from the Russians all over the place, they're saying. And China. It's weird. And they're basically saying, and China also doing all of that. Classic, isn't it? Going on and on about Russia and then, also China. That was the way this, the Guardian has presented it. So, the number of espionage cases against the Chinese in Britain just going up and up and up and up and up. Okay. All right. I mean, we're engaged in an espionage, counter-espionage war with the Russians and the Chinese. Yeah. Yeah, we are, aren't we? wonder if we'll do anything about it, really. I mean, in terms of counter-espionage. It seems to be just letting the Chinese, specifically the Chinese, do anything they want, it looks like, doesn't it? At least with the Russians, something within our establishment, within our deep state, is belligerent about it, right? At least they do talk about it and go on about it. But then on the Chinese side, not really, do they? It doesn't seem like they do. I don't think this government, well, this government did green light their giant super embassy, didn't they? Whenever the Chinese say jump, the British government does for some reason. All right. Blair blasts Labour with call to move firmly right. Well, right within the paradigm of the Labour Party, not actually right. Yeah. All right, the heat is on. Record broken for second day running. St. Paul's Cathedral there. Chinese people in front of the St. Paul's Cathedral. Social media crackdown expected in weeks. Yeah, because the government are trying to guilt everyone with bereaved parents into seizing more control and power. Great. The Express, it's a good paper. J.K. Rowling's chimed in. She cast doubt on Wee Jimmy Cranky's story. J.K. Rowling takes aim at Nicola Sturgeon. I think she just tweeted. I don't think there's much more than that. She just, like most normal people, just said, yeah, right, Nicola. Yeah, right. You didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. I reckon. As if. Right. Bereaved parents tell PM to show courage and restrict children's social media use. Step up, Keir, to stop kids dying. How cynical is that? How cynical? That's my stomach. Step up, Keir. Destroy the ability to be anonymous online and increase censorship, which is a slippery slope to true, full-blown censorship. Step up, Keir. People find it socially awkward to question me, a bereaved parent, so I'm telling you to step up, Keir. Steal more of our freedoms and liberties, Keir. But the Sun, what utter slop. That mayor, I can't even remember what her real name, I don't care about her, don't care. The Sun, complete slop. It's 35 degrees centigrade and water chiefs moan about kids' pools being filled up. Paddling fools. Yeah, some of the water companies are saying, don't waste water. Bit rich, isn't it? Considering we're most of the year round completely waterlogged. We've got all sorts of serious problems with our water and our reservoirs. Serious problems. Couple of hot days, and there's not enough water to fill up a kiddie's paddling pool. Or you can only fill it up, they say, at their advice, is only fill it up halfway. What? Is there enough water or not? Like a few thousand half-filled paddling pools will make the difference. The Financial Times, again, it's been hot. Yeah. BP unseats Manifold, that was their chairman or CEO or whatever, the head of BP, British Petroleum. They unseat after serious concerns over his conduct. As far as I can tell, he was just a little bit of a bully. Like, he shouted a bit. There's so many snowflakes these days, isn't there? So many snowflakes. Imagine if you went back a few decades and you told them that a boss or a senior civil servant or anything, they could get in trouble and even get fired over being a bit shouty. Look, shouty style jars with staff, does it? I've had bosses that were like psychos, basically. They would raise their voice all the time. Literally shout in people's faces and fire them. In the private sector, where there's loads and loads of money and reputational risk on the line. And someone buggers up, and the boss shouts in their face and fires them. kind of not that mad. It's kind of not that crazy. The idea that like a Malcolm Tucker type, a really, really senior civil servant or even a government minister or something, that they bully people, or CEO, I'm bullied. He raised his voice once. I'm bullied. He should be fired. What kind of weak-wristed world are we creating here? Where there's no repercussions for anything. No one's striving for greatness. Like, you know, it's mad, isn't it? We're creating a terribly, terribly weak world where the weakest among us have got the whip hand over people with gumption. Like, the allegations, as far as I can see, are not like serious concerns. He didn't do anything particularly, anything really, as far as I can tell. He was like an aggressive boss. That's it. He certainly didn't commit any crime, right? Any proper crime or anything. It was just the pansies below him didn't like that he was sort of quite aggressive. You always get that, don't you? The Mirror. Some of the very, very, very worst slop on Fleet Street, The Mirror, isn't it? Some of the very worst. A Time for Heroes. Heroes. Pride of Britain Award. Not subversive at all. Not subversive. This is like, you have pride in Britain. Okay. Teen rapist's case review. Good. The right decision, says Sir Keir Starlin. Appeal court will now rule after attackers let off sparks outrage. Yeah, good. PM confirms move and praises bravery of girls who came forward. Yeah, good. Hopefully those kids will get the book thrown. Hopefully they will get a very long custodial sentence. They left that court with 10 or 11... sexual assault or rape convictions between three kids. They're monstrous. Monstrous. I don't care that they were 14 or 15. They're a danger. They're a worry. They can't be trusted, can they? For a very, very long time, if ever. In the pre-modern world, those it wouldn't matter that they were that young. They would be put to death. It just wouldn't matter. And even not that long ago, people like that would be put in prison for a very, very, very long time. Just as a matter of course. Of course they would. Of course they would. Very long time. Okay, the Metro. Ooh. The Metro. Brit dad's teeth pulled out with pliers in Dubai. Just tortured, put in prison for no one knows why and tortured in Dubai. It's funny, I thought Andrew Tate said this, like, Dubai's brilliant. There's nothing going on there. Everything's brilliant in Dubai, isn't it? Or is it Abu Dhabi? Whatever. My bro's 7 month in Dubai hellhole. And family say they still don't know why Ryan, 27, is in jail. So the story in a nutshell is that this guy, Ryan, 27, went to Dubai, and according to him anyway, was thrown in jail by the authorities and 7 months ago and is still in there. And they've beat him up, tortured him, pulled his teeth out with pliers. And according to him and his family, and I can believe them, they haven't even told him why he's been arrested and tortured. That's all right, though. Loads of people will say, oh, just go to Dubai and Abu Dhabi, it's great. Yay. I wouldn't go to an Arab emirate. I wouldn't go and live in an Arab emirate. Are you kidding me? No, I'll never abandon these islands, the islands of my ancestors. No, I'll never abandon Albion. People say that all the time, oh, you know, maybe it's time to think about going to live somewhere else. This country is so bad, I might just go and live in Dubai. Well, go on then. Go on then, off you go. Leave it to you. I'm going to go live in Australia or Canada. Well, go on then. It'll catch up with you there, by the way. Exactly the same problems we face here. It'll catch up with you there as well. No, I'm never abandoning these islands. I was born here, I'll die here. The Daily Star, this is insane slop. This is insane slop from the Daily Star today. Ladyboys in blue. Police in dragnet. Get it? A dragnet. A drag in drag. A dragnet. Yep. It's a story that some cops, like undercover cops, trying to fight organised crime in some way. I guess, what, in like the tire community or something? I don't know. Oh, ladyboys. Cops don frocks to bust drug deal suspect. So, yeah. And they're in drag there. There you go. There you go. There's not much more to say about it. Ridiculous. Insane, insane slop on the front page of the Star today. All right, let's have a look at our... It's already called to see. Let's have a look at our poll. What have we got in the poll today? What did we ask you guys? Okay. We, over 1,000 votes, nearly 1,100 votes. Are you interested in Tony Blair's views on British politics? No. The no's have it. 86% say no. 14% say yes. Yeah, that's my feeling. It's like, in a binary, I agree with Tony Blair more than I agree with Keir Starmer on, like, the vision for government and stuff. But do I want to hear from Tony Blair anymore? No. You shuffle off, mate. Go and enjoy your Order of the Garter, and we'll wheel you out once or twice a year for Remembrance Day or something. There's a royal wedding. You get trotted out for that. Other than that, you keep your mouth shut, mate. You've done enough. You've done enough. Be lucky you're not put on trial for crimes against the nation. Scum. 86% of you say no. Yep. 1,100 votes. My people, the glorious band, the chosen few. Good people, the best among us. All right. Seeing as it's already nearly 10 to and I've got to do recording today, there was one other story, one other big story I thought was of interest today in the Mail. In the Mail, was it? Because the legacy corporate mainstream media have suddenly decided to recognise that Restore is a thing. Right? Oh, I thought it was, maybe it's in the Express. Oh, I'm sorry, it was in the Mail, but the Mail seems to have refreshed its page. All right, bear with me a moment, because I do want to talk about it, find it. Oh, there it is, here we go. Legacy corporate mainstream has decided they're going to recognise that Restore does exist. They've moved from just ignoring it, pretending it doesn't exist, to now, oh yeah, it's something to worry about. Restore Britain faces anti-Semitism outrage, does it? But rivals to Reform insist they won't police their own membership. All right, so here's sort of fairly naked hit piece. Nakedly partisan. But they talk about Steve Laws. Look, there's Stevie boy. All right, mate. Charlie Downs gets a mention, or quote even. Should you read it real quick? Is in a nutshell what the legacy corporate mainstream media is sort of going with at this point. Okay. Written by Christian Calgi. Okay. Senior political correspondent at large. Okay, Christian. The Restore Britain Party was last night told to address urgently claims of anti-Semitism among high-profile supporters and officials. They were told, were they? Really? You're going to characterise that? They were told. You must address anti-Semitism claims urgently. No. They weren't told by anyone. It was just Jewish advocacy groups. Got their knickers in a twist. About nothing, about Steve Laws, who isn't a part of the party. Restore Britain was told to urgently address... Oh, shut up. See, this is the problem. You've been told, naughty child, you've been told what to do and think and say. I think we're starting to get a bit sick of that. The hard right rivals of Reform UK... I mean, Restore isn't that hard right, really, is it? I don't think. like truly hard right. I don't think so. They're pretty. A lot of their policies are basically centrist, basically common sense. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, just common sense stuff, really. Hard right. The hard right rivals to Reform UK on course to help Labour candidate and Andy Burnham win the Makerfield by-election because they're insisting Restore only polling at 7% in Makerfield. We could come second, even win it, but okay. We're helping Andy Burnham. Well, like, that's a bad thing. Or suddenly you care about Keir Starmer's career. I don't care about Keir Starmer's career. Okay, helping Andy Burnham win the Makerfield by-election. Well, yesterday presented with evidence of vile comments made by those connected to the party. That's the classic thing, isn't it? You're just connected to the party. Guilt by association. Like, someone who said they like your party or your organisation said something, therefore it's your problem now. No, that's not how, that's not right, it's not fair, that's not how the world should work. And like every party, if not every organisation, suffers from that. Well, you can't find a supporter from the Green Party, let's say, that said mad things, mad and bizarre things. Or any party, Lib Dem, Labour, Conservative, every single one of them. You'll find someone that's connected to the party, whatever that means. Doesn't have to really mean anything, does it? You can find evidence of them saying mad things. Not that Steve Laws did particularly. And now you can just smear the whole party with that. Or even social media. There's someone in your comments saying crazy stuff. It's like, and that's your problem now. No. You can't help it, can you? How can you possibly prevent it or help it? Okay. But the party, led by former Reform UK MP Rupert Lowe, failed to disavow statements that included calling for the deportation of Jews and insinuations that Nigel Farage has been bought by Jewish money. Rupert Lowe doesn't have to jump when you say jump. You've found something somewhere that you've decided is anti-Semitic, and Rupert Lowe immediately has to disavow everyone and everything connected with it. No, I don't think so. No. One of the party's highest profile supporters, far-right activist Steve Laws. Highest profile supporters. I wouldn't say that. There's loads more higher profile supporters than that. Loads more. Elon Musk, Duncan Ballantyne, Cole Benjamin, loads more. Oh, but Steve Laws. All right, Steve Laws. Who runs a group campaigning for the total deportation of those with non-white heritage from Britain. One of the earliest backers of Restore, he has repeatedly encouraged his 140,000 followers on X to get involved in campaigning for the party. Yeah, he's at liberty to do that. Like, Rupert Lowe may not and doesn't agree with everything Steve Laws says. Rupert Lowe's made that clear. This article is going to claim that that's not the case. Rupert Lowe's made that clear. Steve Laws, 140,000. Steve, Christian has been on your Twitter page, mate. They're on the case. Investigative journalism. This weekend, he sparked outrage. Steve Laws sparked outrage. Or is it Rupert Lowe? This weekend, he sparked outrage after interview comments. Yeah, Steve Laws. After interview comments emerged of him calling for the removal of Jews from Britain, who he branded foreign. It emerged. You mean you watched the Andrew Gold interview from months ago? What do you mean it emerged, Christian? You mean someone sent you a link to that Andrew Gold interview that's months old? Is that what you mean? Mr. Laws has also branded Adolf Hitler a misunderstood politician. I mean, I don't agree with that. A lot of the people like Zuma Historian and Steve Laws, they do go down that route a bit. I don't think Hitler's particularly misunderstood. I think it's quite clear. Anyway, that's me. I don't go down that route of playing defense for like national socialism in any way. I really don't. I think it was bad. I think it was a stupid, wrong-headed political ideology, national socialism. I saw someone the other day arguing with, I think, Carl about nationalism. They said something about nationalism is economically socialist. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. That's one of the most retarded things I think I've ever heard. You do get people on the right that genuinely argue that there were great elements, that the fundamental tenets of national socialism were sound or good. I don't think they were. I really don't. I honestly don't. It was fundamentally flawed as a worldview, as a political creed, I find. There you go. Steve Laws is allowed an opinion, though, isn't he? He's not in the party. Rupert has made it clear that that Steve isn't in the party. He's merely just a supporter. Is Steve Laws allowed an opinion or not anymore in this country? Christian. I imagine if you had your way, no. Steve Laws has branded Adolf Hitler a misunderstood politician and cast doubt on the number of murdered in the Holocaust. Earlier this month, Mr. Laws said he and his supporters are helping build Restore, adding, Restore is the vehicle to a better future for our people. It's as simple as that. That's why I support them. He's not allowed to do that. Well, Rupert Lowe has got... Rupert Lowe has disavowed him, basically. What more do you want? What more do you want? Well, you want Rupert to just... What, like... I don't know really what you would want Rupert to do. Yesterday, the party failed to condemn his deportation comments, arguing, we are not going to police our membership. What's wrong with that, really? Because once you go down that slippery slope, you're just constantly playing defence because someone like this Christian fella at the Mail said, oh, look, here's someone else we don't like. You've got to act. You've got to get rid of them. Every single day. It's a mad slippery slope to go down. If Steve Laws has committed any crimes, actual crimes, then maybe. But otherwise, what can... They're asking for, like, effectively articles like this. They're asking for really quite a bizarre and insane level of gatekeeping. That if they decide someone said anything they don't like, it's pretty much that, isn't it? Anything they don't like, you're not even allowed to be a member of a party. They haven't said anything criminal. It's just an opinion they don't like. Is that healthy? Is that good for politics? Or is it just better if parties don't police their own membership? Isn't that better? What if you insisted that the Green Party or the Labour Party or the Lib Dems or whatever policed their membership to the point where every time you, the Mail group, say, found someone who had an opinion on anything you didn't like and you just forced them to ostracise that person? How does this make for healthy politics or a healthy society in any way? A spokesman, a Restore spokesman, added, what Steve Laws says is up to Steve Laws. It's absolutely nothing to do with us. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was going around Twitter somewhere. There was some sort of miscommunication that someone... I think Rupert had... Someone thought that Steve Laws was actually working for the party. He's not and has never done. There was some sort of miscommunication or something where... For a brief period, for like a few hours or a day, or was it Lois Perry just lied about it? I can't remember. Said that Steve Laws was actually like an organiser or like a paid actress or an employee or something of a story. He's not. He's, you know, he's just a member. He's just a fan. I don't even know if he's a member. I think he is a member, but beyond that, he might not even be a member, but he's just a fan. He's just... Yeah. What Steve Laws says is up to Steve Laws. Yeah, is he a free person? Is he allowed to have opinions? Like non-criminal opinions? Is he allowed to say them or not? It has absolutely nothing to do with us. That's not good enough for the Mail group, apparently. Christian Calgary, is it? What was it? What was his name? What was this snivelling little wretch's name? Calgi. Christian Calgi. No, it's not good enough, apparently. No, no. You've got to ostracize and ruin people who have an opinion he doesn't like. But they refuse to answer key questions about whether Mr. Laws is a member of Restore and about his claims that he is in daily contact with Mr. Lowe's advisors. Anyone can act Mr. Lowe's advisors. You can just at them on Twitter. If they follow you and you follow them, yeah, you can just contact them. That's not that weird or anything at all. Again, you're trying to make it out like... Nor did the party condemn posts from one official that appeared to imply Nigel Farage had been bought by Jewish money. Replying to a tweet, by Mr. Farage in which he said he can't be bought. You did have a Cameo account though, didn't you, Nigel, where he was quite literally being bought for like a small amount of money. So in a sense, you really can be bought. Replying to a tweet, that Nigel's tweet, Restore Britain's campaign director, Charlie Downs. Hey, Charlie. I had him on the breakfast show the other day, didn't I? A week or two ago. I'll get him on again. Don't worry. Friend of the channel, Charlie Downs. Great lad. Brilliant lad. Future leader. Posted an image of Mr. Farage at the launch event of Reform's Jewish Alliance Group. What's wrong with that? It's an image. Ooh. Mr. Downs later said, MPs should serve their constituents and Britain's national interests, not foreign lobbies and minority advocacy groups. Yeah, good. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that line, that opinion? Christian. What's wrong? What's your problem? You don't explicitly say in this article. Restore Britain's spokesman backed their official, saying, he's absolutely right. Restore Britain will put the British interests first, each and every time. Lovely. Lovely. Is it too much to ask for the Mail Group? Apparently it is. For the shill who wrote this article, apparently that's too much. That's beyond the pale. To put Britain first and British interests first. That's somehow wrong or wrong-headed, the implication is here. Asked about other media reports of far-right activists signing up as Restore Britain members and helping campaign for the party, the spokesman said, we have been very clear, we are not going to police our membership. The membership endorses our position, not the reverse, obviously. That's a reasonable line to take, isn't it? Rather than some nightmarish, censorious type of cancel culture that this article is effectively calling for. But the party was condemned by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism over its failure to distance. It's been told to urgently act by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism over its failure to distance itself from those perpetrating offensive and anti-Semitic reviews, in their opinion. And so it starts. The attack. They went from ignoring us, a little bit of ridicule, and now fully on the attack. First one, let's go with anti-Semitism. It worked a blinder against Corbyn, didn't it? First one, try and hit them with being anti-Semitic. We'll move on to the other ones later. We'll line up all the things. We'll find like a misogynist thing or an anti-Islam, and there's an Islamophobia thing later. We'll find that. We'll go down the whole list. Let's start at the top. Anti-Semitism. A spokesman for the group told the Daily Mail, this rhetoric and these associations are gravely concerning. No, they're not. No, they're not. For you, maybe, but they're not really, are they? Not really. At a time when some fringe parties are failing to show where they stand on anti-Semitism and extremism, Restore should set itself apart and speak out. We don't have to do anything. Rupert doesn't, and the leadership of the party don't have to do anything you want or say. Restore should set itself. We don't have to do anything. Why are you telling us what we should or shouldn't do and think and say and act like? It should set itself apart and speak out If it fails to do so, that will send a clear message of its own. You just have to do as we're told, basically. That's what they would have, that's how they would have it. The campaign against anti-Semitism. Just get back in your box and do as you're told. Say what we tell you to say. If they fail to do so. Jews are not foreign. Does Restore accept that? Saying that this is a matter for members won't cut it. Some of this is from people who appear to have formal roles in the party. Steve Laws hasn't got a formal role in the party. Many Jews will be foreign though, won't they? I mean, that's just a matter of fact. Many, not all of them, get Jewish people convert to Judaism. But those people were Semitic people, weren't they? This is just facts, right? They're from the Levant. They're from the Near East. So many of them, absolutely will be. Objectively, factually speaking. Judaism is effectively a foreign religion, historically. This is a Christian country, historically, isn't it? Before that, before Christianity, pagan. I mean, there have been Jewish people here for centuries. On and off. But historically, it's not a Jewish country. So that religion is effectively foreign. They just don't want you to deal with reality and facts, do they? This is the difference between being a loose-knit, provocative protest group and a serious political party, which does Restore want to be. Don't worry about it. Campaign against anti-Semitism, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll deal with what we want to do and say. They're trying to just pile scorn on us for not doing exactly what they would like. Labour, however, is revelling in the rise of the party as opposition to reform. Wonder if they'll be revelling it if Restore actually win that by-election. Will they be revelling in it then? As it threatens to split the vote, Restore threatens to split the vote on the right and pave the way for Mr. Burnham to return to Parliament at next month's Makerfield election. Yeah, look, they're going with that. They're sort of insisting that the polling is that still. When it's not. Probably polling more at 25% actually. Let me just quickly read the last few paragraphs. Because it's the other angle, the other thing that the legacy corporate mainstream media are talking about. Polling this weekend saw reform trailing Mr. Bumham by 3 points, with Restore in third place, mopping up a crucial 7% support. Labour sources in Makerfield say they have found notable levels of support for Restore in the constituency backing up the weekend poll. Yeah, the reality on the ground looks like it's way more than 7%. One Labour campaign source revealed that they have had to adopt their own campaign data collection system. One Labour campaign source revealed they have had to adapt their own campaign data collection system to add a button for voters saying they're backing Restore, quote, as it is coming up so often, quote. Aim high, vote low, millions must go from Zimmers to Boomers. A senior Labour MP said Restore is, quote, definitely a feature on the doorstep, quote, and the party is, quote, clearly very well funded, quote. Okay. One Burnham activist said they had encouraged one voter wavering between Reform and Restore to consider Mr. Lowe's party. It came as elections expert Sir John Curtis joined voices saying that Restore Britain's candidacy in the Makerfield by-election is good news for Andy Burnham. He warned that Mr. Lowe's party is making life, quote, much more difficult, quote, for Mr. Farage, given the seat is on, quote, an absolute knife edge. Restore Britain is intervening and making life much more difficult for Reform. On the one hand, so far as Burnham is concerned, the intervention of Restore Britain is definitely good news. On the other hand, it also shows that if Reform are able to squeeze this Restore vote, because they've lost 1 in 8 of their 2024 voters to Restore, then, even if this poll is accurate, Reform would still overtake Andy Burnham. It's a three-horse race in that constituency. Absolutely a three-horse race. And if Restore come third, which it looks like they almost certainly, at least certainly will do that, that's great. That's great. If they come second, that's amazing. And if they win it, well, game on. Game on. All right. The other party's just not turning up. I mean, quite literally, I think the Greens are literally not turning up. The Tories and Tories and Lib Dem polling at nothing. I say nothing, like 1-2%. It's a three-horse race. All right. Should we have a look at... On this day in history. On this day in history. I like doing the segment. You like doing the segment. Let's have a look down through the centuries. On the 27th of May, what happened of note? Right, let's see what we've got. On this day in 1679, the Habeas Corpus Act passes in England, strengthening a person's right to challenge unlawful arrest and imprisonment. Yeah. Very important thing, of course, habeas corpus. Anyone knows anything about law, the history of law, jurisprudence? The idea, whether it always works in practice or not, the idea that you can appeal against sort of what you, if you think you're sort of unlawfully detained and arrested and imprisoned. It's to try and stop tyrants, basically. Try and stop the Star Chamber. Anyone doesn't know at the moment, Harry. At the moment, on my history show Bodegas Epochs, lotusseats.com behind the paywall, consider signing up for as little as £5 a month bronze tier membership. I'm talking about the Tudor age at the moment. I've done Henry the VII and I'm now on Henry the VIII. Talk a fair bit all the way about the Star Chamber, i.e. that the Crown can just arrest anyone they want and do anything they want, basically. So obviously 1679 is much after that, isn't it? I mean, that's after the Civil War, but habeas corpus to try and prevent tyrannical governments. Doesn't always work. Sometimes it's deliberately suspended during times of war as well, even in modern times. Okay, on this day in 1703, St. Petersburg, sometimes known as Leningrad or Petrograd, it's all the same place, or just Petersburg, it's all the same city, is founded by Russian Tsar Peter the Great. Yeah, so that city isn't all that old, relatively, in the scheme of things, right? A lot of people died making that city as well. Slave labour, effectively. At St. Petersburg, there's the bodies of quite a lot of slave labourers underneath that city. Okay. On this day in 1873, Heinrich Schliemann discovers, quote, Priam's treasure, quote, a cache of gold and other objects in Anatolia, in Turkey. Yep, fascinating. Know all about that. That's a classic history nerds thing. Schliemann, a German amateur archaeologist and a businessman with money of his own, was fascinated by the ancient world, particularly Homer. And he did loads of amateur archaeology paid for by himself in Greece. And then decided he thought he knew where Troy was back in the 19th century and before. People thought Troy, the actual Priam, by the way, Priam is the king of Troy in the Iliad. Right, Hector is his son, but the king is an old man Priam. So Priam's treasure is the treasure of Troy, basically. Schliemann decided he knew where it was. He'd read the text well enough, knew where it was, in somewhere in Turkey on the Anatolian coast, and went there, did loads of archaeology of his own. Really, really crude archaeology, digging stuff up. This is the main criticism. Digging stuff up and destroying the layers above what he was trying to get to, like sort of. Using dynamite. Imagine that. Modern archaeology, where they sit there delicately with like a little toothbrush and delicately pick away every tiny little thing. That's quite new. That's firmly a 20th century thing. Schliemann was just using dynamite to blow up the side of a hill. Oh, what's there? Is there any gold? That was how he was doing it, a bit. He did find some remarkable things. Boom. Is that Helen's headdress? Almost certainly not. Anyway, they found, he did find loads of treasure. Golden treasure. treasure. Golden things. Look at that. Wow. Whether they're truly, whether the, that site is truly Troy. People think, I think the consensus among serious archaeologists these days is that, yeah, it is. For a long time, people said, like, good find, cool find, bro, but that's not Troy. Troy's fictional. The epic poems of Homer are talking about a fictional thing. And even if it isn't entirely fictional, you, an amateur archaeologist, didn't find it. I think they, most archaeologists these days think it is. Or it is, basically, I think. Yeah. He found one particular sort of burial chamber, which had obviously hadn't been plundered in ancient times. All sorts of stuff, particularly that headdress. And then he smuggled them out of Turkey, though. Because it was the Ottoman Empire at that time still. And really, the object should have belonged to them, I suppose, right? But he smuggled them out, took them back to Germany. After World War II, after the Soviets conquered Germany, the Soviets took them back. So now a lot of these objects are in Russian museums. There's his wife. He put his wife in them. That's Sophie, or Sophia Schulman, his wife. He's just going to go to Turkey, Ottoman Turkey, do really, really crude archaeology, smuggle the golden, fabulous golden objects out, and put them on his wife and take a picture. You can see why some people feel like, you know, he wasn't a particularly serious archaeologist. Nonetheless, remarkable finds, right? Can't deny that. All right. Enough about Priam's treasure. The Battle of Tsushima, really important one. 1905, on this day, 1905, the Japanese fleet destroys the Russian East Sea Fleet in the Battle of Tsushima, the only decisive clash between modern steel battleships in history. Where's Jutland, is it there? Battle of Jutland, no? I know there's very few. Anyway, that was a turn-up for the books. Nobody expected the Japanese would defeat the Russians at sea. No one expected that. I mean, this led to... This was the beginning of the end for the Tsarist regime in various ways, right? You got the 1905 revolution off the back of this. The whole Tsarist regime almost collapsed. It was certainly mortally wounded after that. Of course, it doesn't collapse until World War One, after World War One, 1917. We've got 12 more years, but it was mortally wounded by that. The Russians and the rest of the world couldn't quite believe it. It's like, well, we thought not that long ago, a generation or two generations before that, Japan was like nowhere near capable of such a thing. It's actually the British helped them out in naval matters very, very heavily. The Japanese were like, who's the best navy in the world? Well, it's the British, obviously. Can we learn everything? Can you send officers over and teach us how to do modern professional navies? Can we, like, buy battleships off of you guys? And the British were like, yeah, all right then. Yeah. Okay, Battle of Tsushima. There was another battle as well, not long after that. The Russians were like, well, we can't have that. We'll send a whole nother fleet. We'll get together a whole nother fleet, everything we can, send it out, and we'll get revenge on the Japanese for that one. And they tried that and lost again. Okay. Miracle of Dunkirk. Someone yesterday said it, didn't they? Operation Dynamo. Yeah, Dunkirk. On this day, 1940, British and Allied forces begin the evacuation of Dunkirk, Operation Dynamo, during World War II. Yeah. These are largely British troops on the beach. The French and British Expeditionary Force have been beaten in the field by the Germans. Came steaming through the Ardennes forest. We didn't expect that. You have to go round the Ardennes forest. You can't drive armoured vehicles through the impenetrable Ardennes. Oh, no, you can. Oh, wait. Oh, no, they did. We've been flanked. It's not funny, is it? But we did get nearly all of the men off of the beach at Dunkirk. You know, classic thing. Everyone pulled together in Britain to get as many boats, launches, even very, very small boats, across the channel to ferry men back. said yesterday, didn't I? The Germans, if they wanted to, if they wanted to be absolutely ruthless, could have caused a giant massacre on those beaches if they wanted to. But they didn't. Thank heaven. All right. On this day, 1963, Komo Kenyatta is elected as the first Prime Minister of Kenya. Never heard of him. In this year, on this day in 1999, International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia indicts Slobodan Milosevic and four others for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Kosovo. It's one of those things I've threatened on Epochs for a long, long time to talk about the Yugoslavian wars. It's one of those things I've been fascinated in my entire adult life. Because I remember the Yugoslavian wars happening when I was like a teenager. I sort of lived through it effectively. But it's one of those topics, I think I've said this before, it's one of those topics where, and it's not a cop-out, it's really true to say, it's sort of insanely complex. The more you read about it and learn about it, the more you realise you don't know. The more you realise you don't understand. It's not just a straightforward thing. Like the Battle of Cressy, where there's a very small number of accounts. You read all those accounts. You read half a dozen people, historians, talking about those accounts. That's it, you've got it. It's not that. It's really, really complicated. Effectively, like, centuries of history wrapped up in how they ended up there. Yeah, the Balkans is extremely, extremely complicated. That's why I've never actually done it yet. I do want to do it. I will do it at some point. Also, it's extremely divisive. People, you'll say certain things about it, and people immediately get angry, you know. No, you've got it wrong. That's not what it was. That's not how it was. Well, why are you shilling for that angle and not the one I like? All that sort of stuff. Fascinating, though. Absolutely fascinating, I think. All right. On this day in 2006, an earthquake strikes Java in Indonesia, killing 6,600 people. That's bad. I'm not sure if I even remember that one. That whole Pacific Rim, though, yeah. The number of volcanoes and earthquakes they get in that region. A lot. All right. Should we do the Rumble Rants and Super Chats? Should we see what we've got here? Let me do this with my mic boom so I can see the left hand side of my screen for the Rumble Rants. Here we go. Yes, global church history is still at number one. Still at number one. Reigning, defending, undisputed. He says, today in 1199, John crowned King of England. John Plantagenet, the son of Henry II, little brother to Richard the Lionheart. He's crowned King of England. Oh, just that. You just say that. I've got long-form content all about all of those people I just mentioned there. Long-form content. Got a few hours of me just chatting about John. I think when I was talking about John, it's more than one episode even. I'm pretty sure I did one just on Magna Carta. Anyway, I've certainly got loads of content about... Richard Lionheart was at least a three-parter. I talk about the Third Crusade somewhere else as well. Richard Lionheart's Crusade. Henry II, loads of content on him. I've got one all about William Marshall, one all about Thomas Becket, one all about Eleanor of Aquitaine. There's loads of hours of me talking about this stuff. Check it out. £5 a month. If you're so inclined. All right, and the second factoid we get from global church history. On this day in 1603, France signed Le Grand Alliance, its first native treaty, where Etchemins, apologies if I'm not pronouncing that right, and Algonquins, Native American or Native Canadian peoples, First Nation peoples, they let the French to settle in Bay Sainte Catherine in Quebec. Right, there you go. So, story of French colonization of Canada. Okay. On this day in... Oh, no, sorry, you haven't got another one, sorry. The next Rumble Rant is... TF2 is better. It says, previously on the show, you said you have content on the rescue of Mussolini and Operation Market Garden. I went and watched them and highly recommend for any World War II buffs. Oh, thank you very much. That's kind. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. What else have I got? World War II. Yeah, the Operation Market Garden multi-part series with Josh Firm, in conversation with Josh Firm. Yeah, the Mussolini Operation. I've got Kursk, the Battle of Kursk. I think a two or even three-part series about the Battle of Kursk. I've got more World War II stuff. What else have I got? Oh, one all about the raid on Saint-Nazaire. The British Special Forces raid on Saint-Nazaire. I've got more. I can't think off the top of my head. What else have I got? Harry, while I'm talking, can you bring up the Epochs page?
Yeah.
All right, cheers. I'll come back to you on that, but I've got more as well. There's more. All right. Fallen Firebird says, Blair says we risk being, quote, marooned on an island of irrelevance, quote, the absolute brass neck and cheek of it. Yeah. Yeah. The brass neck of it. When he set the heading and then broke off the wheel so nobody could correct it, what a demon. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Yeah, what a demonic person Tony Blair is. Yeah. Okay, JC Warlock says, make Albion great again. Make Alba great again. Yeah. We'll take our country back. And then you sent in another one saying, Loch Ness Castle Monster. JC Warlock always bangs that drum. Credit. Credit. Tenacious. Okay. For T and Barber, morning, sir. You say, morning, mate, you all right? Yeah, I'm all right. You all right? This dreadful social media ban is a slippery slope indeed. They're going to come for your... there must be a typo. They're going to come for your... something pouches as well? I don't know what that is. Sorry. I'm genuinely furious about that news. Aim high, vote low. Yeah. It's obviously a slippery slope, isn't it? Really, really obviously a slippery slope. Oh, more World War II things on Epochs. Origins of the SAS. Harry, bring it up so people can see. Harry? Harry? Can you do that? There you go. Origins of the SAS in, obviously, the North Africa campaign. David Sterling there. There's the one. Daring Raids Operation Oak. That's where the German Special Forces rescued Mussolini, who was being held by Italian partisans. This is the Epochs page. So much good content. So good. I've got more World War II stuff, haven't I? All right, there's the old thumbnails. Lawrence of Arabia's World War I, isn't he, of course? All right, I haven't got time to whip through it, I'm afraid. There's too many. There's too many. 260-odd plus. Got to get back to these. Logan17pine says, morning, it's 1 a.m. here in California. Glad to catch you live. Oh, cheers. For the Late Late Bo Show. The Late Late Show with Bo Dade. Actually, Harry, get rid of that, because I'll just keep scrolling through it. Cheers. Cheers. No, you stayed up late in California. Thinking about heading out California way. Thanks for watching from the other side of the world. Appreciate it. It's remarkable, really. Thank you, sir. All right, Harry, can you bring up the YouTube ones? Because you have to do that for me, I'm afraid, if you wouldn't mind. Bring them up on my screen. Let's see what we got today. How many do we have? About a dozen or so. Okay. Kick you in the throat, regular YouTube super chatter. Thank you. At Kick You in the Throat says, Sheffield's Tony Folds came to the US this week to visit the grave of the B-17 pilot who sacrificed himself and crew to avoid harming him and children in Endcliff Park after aborted emergency landing. Oh, okay. I've never heard of this incident. But, what, a B-17 pilot crashed his plane in order to save some children. Amazing. Amazing. I've never heard of that, but... Okay, cool. Good. That's sad. Brendan Lucas 9732 says, UK has a lower GDP per capita than Mississippi and has a comparable military to Holland, aside from two slow supercarriers and 150 nukes, and they're not sure if they work. All right, mate, you're just dunking on Britain there. Well, thanks, yeah. Yeah, our GDP isn't great, yeah. Yeah, our military is subpar and underfunded, yeah. What do you want? Well done. Well done, your country is the size of a continent and extremely, extremely resource rich. And the wealth of empires flooded to your country during two world wars. Yeah, well done. Yeah, great. Well done. Good for you. All right. Daniel D. King says, the arch traitor should have been tried for his crimes against the country. I guess you're talking about Blair, the Dark Lord. The least he could do is crawl back into his crypt and stay there. Yeah, right. That's what I feel, yeah. Just enjoy your retirement, Tony. Go and sit on the board of a load of companies and make a load of money. But just keep quiet in the public square if you would. He won't. Yeah, that's how I feel, absolutely, Daniel D. King. All right, Adam Waller says, OTDIH, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. But it looks like you've got a factoid for us here. You say, in 1796... died Lord Charles Townshend. He's been elected MP for Great Yarmouth on the 25th. On this day in history. Oh, sorry. OTDIH. On this day in history. Okay, sorry, got it. You say also on this day, he was murdered by his brother, who was a vicar. Oh, well, there you go. I never knew that. Never knew he was murdered by his own brother, who was a vicar. And then something new every day. Thank you for the... Cheers for that. On this day in history. I like these factoids. I'm a history nerd. Always will be. Second one from Kick You in the Throat says, Anglosphere fun fact. The largest single expansion of US territory, the LA Purchase of 1803. Oh, Louisiana Purchase. I was going to say, LA Purchase? I'm not aware of this. No, the Louisiana Purchase. The famous Jeffersonian Louisiana Purchase. Yeah, I've talked about that before. Oh, no, on my own channel, Harry, on History Bro, I've got long form content all about Jefferson in conversation with Benjamin Boyce. Boycey, he's well alright. If you don't like Boycey, there's something wrong with you. He's well alright. Got long form content all about Jefferson there. Talk all about the Louisiana Purchase and that. It's largely attributable to the Brits' war threats to Napoleon. Yeah. Thanks to you, I live in Missouri instead of France. Yeah. It's interesting. All those people that lived in that part of the world, the bit of land that the United States Jefferson bought off of the French in the Louisiana Purchase, they in a few short years just they were supposed to be French nominally, and then suddenly they're United States. But Napoleon realized, of course, I talk about it all in my Napoleon thing as well, Harry. My Napoleon thing, I talk all about it as well, from the French side, of course. Napoleon realised he couldn't control that big swathe of land. That either the United States or the British would conquer it and colonise it. The French just didn't have the resources and the political capital and a whole number of reasons. So instead of just let it be taken off him piecemeal or by conquest, at least make a little bit of money out of it, right? At least sell it. He didn't want to sell it to the English. Of course not. They were his main rival, the English. So he's like, Mr. Jefferson, let's sit down and talk turkey. Let's make a deal. And Jefferson's like, how much are you asking for the land? Yeah, that's a good deal. Okay, sold. Crazy story. Yeah, the greatest single expansion in US history. One of the greatest land purchases of all time. Okay, Brendan Lucas then says, are Irish immigrants who came in their tens of thousands in the 1950s to England more British than Russian Jews who came to England in the 1900s? Well, neither of them are British, are they? Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, is not Britain. They've been very clear about that, haven't they? They've been very clear about that. And Russian Jews aren't British either, so... You want me to rank one more than the other? No, they just both aren't. How about that? Brendan Lucas said, British fleet collided with German fleet at Jutland. Yeah. Germans sank more ships, but Britain had effectively confined the high seas fleet to port. Yeah. Yeah, the Battle of Jutland is very, very interesting and important. Very. I talk about it a little bit with Godfrey Bloom in one of my conversations. I've threatened to do a whole long-form piece of content just on Jutland. Admiral Beatty and Jutland and how it all went down. How Beatty crossed the T and all that sort of thing. I think we lost a few... Well, we did lose a few more ships than them. So maybe you could say it's a tactical victory for them. But it was an absolute strategic victory for us. Absolutely. The German fleet went back into port and never left again. And we could blockade Germany from the north and half-starve that country. So strategically, an utter victory for us. Okay, and the last one here today says, AC1D Helm says, nothing better than being a 17th upper ladder, trimming a hedge, listening to the hashtag The Real BBC. Oh, sorry, 17 foot, sorry. Nothing better than being 17 foot upper ladder, trimming a hedge, listening to hashtag The Real BBC. Bo's Breakfast Club, BBC, the real BBC. Best way to start the day. Shall we bring back British Empire? Question mark. I don't think the British Empire particularly did much wrong. They did do some things wrong, but is it bring it back? No. Don't buy the lie that all colonialism is intrinsically evil. We brought them lots of great things. Literacy, newspapers, railroads, education, a functioning political system, loads of things. But would I want the empire back again? No, it's more hassle than it's worth. No. Much, much more hassle than it's worth. It's my opinion. All right, there you go. That's the show. It's now 38 minutes past 9 in the AM, British summertime. Went on a little bit longer than I suspected. On Wednesday, the 27th of May, in the year of our Lord, 2026. Thank you for watching. You've been the Glorious Band.